Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. It's Bird News with Mark Verdi, Science Coordinator, Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I think last month we said signs of spring, and now we're really starting to see ospreys are returning. Is it a little bit early?
Yes. Yeah. St. Patrick's Day is always sort of the very first ospreys and piping plovers you expect right around St. Patrick's Day. But, you know, there's been a male in a very visible nest in Orleans, the Cedar Pond. You might not know the name of that pond, but it's the pond on your right as you approach the Orleans Rotary on Route 6 heading to the Outer Cape. And that's a very visible nest. Usually that male sometimes shows up on the 10th. So there are certain early ones, but I feel like there's been a flurry of early sightings over the last week. And even before, there was a credible sighting last month.
Oh, wow.
And it's tempting. Well, it's climate change. Well, no, it was kind of a normal cold winter. I think it's more that the population has gone up so much. There are just more of them out there.
It's like get there early to get your seat, right?
Yeah, it's right. And so, right, this density dependence where they're fighting for nest sites and, you know, they're coming back early to make sure they can secure that nest site. I mean, that might be it. The males know that there are lots of other males around. If they don't get back to their nest, they're going to have to fight for it. Mm-hmm. And now they're fighting, you know, they have to fight eagles for them sometimes.
Yeah,
now.
I was going to say, tell us about, so there was an eagle that took over an osprey's nest and the eagle nest came down. Was that same nest or was that in a different spot?
Yeah, so it was the nest, the actual location has been sort of secret, you know, the state doesn't want people to know about. There's still a protected species here in Massachusetts. But everybody was watching what was happening at that nest I just mentioned, that Cedar Pond, that really visible one atop a huge tall pole that, you know, the power company put up years ago to get them off the high tension wires. And then so the eagles were hanging out on that one and everybody was noticing that. And then the osprey came back, that early male who comes back on March 10th, and he was flipping out and attacking the eagles every day and talons blaring. And meanwhile, another pair of eagles had quietly taken over a less conspicuous osprey nest nearby successfully. And so eventually the ospreys at Cedar Pond drove away those eagles who probably weren't that serious. But then these other eagles were successful. And so that eagle nest, former osprey nest, has been there for a couple of years. They fledged two chicks the first year. The first chicks fledged on the Outer Cape since, I don't know, 19th century, really. Probably late 1800s or something.
Wow.
Because I think it was 1904 or 5 was the last eagle nest known in Massachusetts, never mind the Cape, and it was in Sandwich. Snake Pond, which is like, I couldn't even point to that on a map, but that was the last eagle nest. So eagles were gone long before DDT in Massachusetts.
Do we know why?
And so loss of trees, persecution, shooting them.
Oh, my.
You know, shooting raptors was really common back then. Wow. I mean, you know, the Hawk Mountain Sanctuary, it's a sanctuary. You know, it's a well-known hawk watch. Birders know about Hawk Mountain in Pennsylvania. It's a mountain ridge that hawks use to, they migrate along ridges. They follow the updrafts that wind hits the side of the ridge and deflects upwards, and hawks will ride that during migration. So that became a well-known hawk migration site. But it started off as a place where a woman kind of protesting that these hunters were going there and just shooting them all. Not hawks that were in their yard eating chickens, but just indiscriminately shooting migrating hawks and eagles at Hawk Mountain in Pennsylvania, so that she established that as a sanctuary and to end that practice. So yeah, people just shooting eagles to protect whatever, chickens and things back then. And plus there weren't that many trees, and they weren't doing what ospreys, you know, ospreys have been nesting on human structures for a long time. I mean, really, you know, in the 1800s, people were putting up a wagon wheel atop a pole. The lore was that they wanted ospreys nesting to keep the red-tailed hawks away because they knew the ospreys wouldn't bother their chickens. But eagles always kind of wanted trees, and so I think there weren't that many trees, and they just sort of dwindled, and then they shot out the last few. But now they're in the early stages of coming back. Ospreys are they're back, back, back. But eagles are kind of just starting to claw their way back, and we've had two nests on the Cape so far. But to finish, get back to your first question, that one in Orleans was on an osprey pole, the kind that people put up. It was an old telephone pole with some wood on top, and it blew down. The pole snapped. It rotted at the bottom, this old telephone pole, and snapped during the windstorm we had about a month ago. I don't know if you remember. It was like a wicked windy weekend and Monday, and it fell down. And so Orleans Conservation Trust owns the property it was on, and so they got on it. They contacted us, and I got Chris Walls here at Mass Audubon Long Pasture involved. He's been putting up some osprey nests on the side, osprey poles, and so he built a pole, and we got a pole put back up with OC Orleans Conservation Trust volunteers and the Town of Orleans Natural Resources Department with the Harbor Master boat. It was a great group effort. But I don't think the eagles are going to come back to that pole where it got put back up because it's kind of lower. I think that'll go back to being an osprey pole. And the eagles, I think it seems like they had moved on. Somebody at Mass Audubon Wellfleet Bay saw them carrying a stick heading across into Eastham somewhere, parts unknown. And so it may be that maybe they'll build something somewhere else. Maybe they'll take a year off. It doesn't really matter. They live a really long time. They have many, many years to reproduce themselves. And losing a year, throughout the history of eagles, they've had storms blow down their nests. It's a very normal thing. And they might lose a year of productivity, and it's totally fine. They're still around in the area. Where the next nest is will,
Wait and
remains to be
see.
seen. Usually the photographers find it, and then they kind of keep it secret. They keep it amongst themselves. But yeah, we'll see.
Joe in West Yarmouth has a question. He says he saw what appeared to be a reliable report of another eagle pair building a nest on a pond in Falmouth. And he's wondering, Mark, if you know anything about that.
No. There's been a pair of eagles, kind of hanging around and trying to take over different nests in Falmouth. It was on The pair had been hanging out on an osprey nest that was actually in a tree. It was like a spruce tree on some property that was like multiple housing units. And then inexplicably, all of a sudden, a tree company showed up and cut down the tree with the osprey nest in it that the
Oh
eagles
my.
had been using.
Wow.
And I've been meaning to follow up on that. If anybody knows anything about that, it was just bad form. There's nothing, the tree was fine. It made no sense.
But it's not like you don't see a nest that big, right? I mean,
Right. I mean, it was an osprey nest. I don't know if the eagles had been serious about using it or if they were just hanging out there. But anyway, that was gone. And then I got a tip. Somebody else was visiting friends in Falmouth, and they had a historical red-tailed hawk nest in their yard. And the eagles were hanging out on that.
Wow.
And then they were interacting, and the hawks didn't like that. But they might be back there, but maybe it's this same pair. I think they're just sort of bouncing around. I think they have been for a few years, sort of thinking about, and they need to pick a spot and
Find
settle
a
down.
new home,
But I don't know about a pond in Falmouth. I'd be interested in
If
hearing
anybody
more.
knows, let us know. 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we have some other early migrants returning, blackbirds, turkey vultures, right?
The first real signs of spring that come in late winter, late February, is when we start to see signs of spring in terms of birds coming back. And that there's sort of a grim lot, right? It's not like the bluebird of happiness. It's like turkey vultures, coming back to see what dead marine animals are lying on beaches, and grackles. Grackles are beautiful, and those first few grackles in February kind of give you a little bit of hope, and then very quickly it's like, oh, the damn grackles.
I know
They're
they're
just
mobby bird feeder, yeah.
they're not very popular, but they're back, and red-winged blackbirds are back, and they have been for a while. I've been hearing red-winged blackbirds singing for in different places on occasion for like a month. And some number of red-winged blackbirds do winter and overwinter in the area. It's not like they're not like coming back from South America. They're coming back from, Bristol County or Rhode Island or something in some cases. The male red-winged blackbirds in particular winter pretty far north. And again, it's that competition for space. They're very competitive, but male red-winged blackbirds, they have to get a territory, secure a territory to be able to mate. And so they tend to winter a little further north and come back earlier than the females because they've got to secure that spot. And so that's probably mostly what we're seeing. But I've got red-winged blackbirds flying over my neighborhood every morning, and there had been none a month ago. So it's another clear sign of spring. I'm wondering if anybody would call in. Has anybody heard any woodcocks? I haven't. I'm sure somebody has. There are places where they do seemingly overwinter on the Cape, like in West Barnstable, these kind of wet thickets. They quietly will overwinter and they will sometimes display in the middle of winter. But the ones that do leave the area do come back really early. So woodcocks are late February too. And that's a fun one. So if anybody's been hearing the meh, meh, and then the aerial display, let me know, because some of our reliable spots for them have not been so reliable. We do woodcock walks here at our Mass Audubon Long Pasture and at Wellfleet Bay, and there just don't seem to be as many as there used to be. And they've been on a watch list for a long time as an early successional species that likes shrublands and things that they like a combination of fields and wet thickets. And there seems to be plenty of that kind of habitat, but I
Not
feel like
yeah.
I'm not seeing as many woodcocks or
Anne
hearing them as
has
much
a
anymore.
woodcock question. She says, I was
Oh,
in
good.
a very windy downtown Boston last Saturday, and I saw a woodcock lying on its side, dead on the sidewalk by the John Hancock building. At first, I thought it must have flown into or been blown into the glass building in the high winds. But when I looked more closely, I could see that its eye had been pecked out. Would Mark be willing to speculate a little on how a woodcock could have ended up on a city street so far, far from what I think of as its normal habitat?
Right. And so this just shows you how bird migration works. And so a lot of birds migrate at night, including things you would never expect to see in a city. Like I once found a Virginia rail, a marsh bird. You never see them, right? They just stay hidden in marshes. Sometimes you hear them. But they migrate. And they migrate at night. And I once heard one flying over my house, but I found one pancaked on the ramp going down into a parking garage under a building in downtown Boston, a Virginia rail. And so everything migrates, and anything that migrates has the potential to hit a building and end up on a sidewalk in a city. And it's a major problem, and a lot of bird conservation organizations have been working on this. Large numbers of warblers all dying in the same night has gotten a lot of attention, certain events where that happens. But it sort of happens as a slow trickle during migration. And then sometimes there are big events where a lot of things die. But woodcocks migrate, and so they're subject to hitting buildings and ending up on sidewalks, and then that probably after the fact something pecked its
Pecked
eye
out,
out.
yeah. All
But
right.
I'm sure it hit a building while migrating at night.
All right. Let's talk to Harry, giving us a call from Chilmark. Hi, Harry.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I'm just calling on the woodcock thing. I live on the north shore of Martha's Vineyard in Chilmark, and I've been in the same place for almost 20 years. And there is a spot that's sort of like the valley that drains down to the Brickyard, and there's woodcocks in there. Sometimes I'll hear them in mid-February. I think I heard my earliest one February 22nd or something this year. So there's woodcocks here, and it's every year I hear them. I don't know if they stay. I don't think they stay because I'm in those woods every day, and I just start hearing them right mid to late February. Yep,
Yeah,
they're
that
here.
makes sense. I mean, everything's a little the vineyard's a little more southern in a lot of ways when you look at the flora and fauna there. But yeah, so that makes sense. I mean, sometimes there are big flocks of turkey vultures there in the winter, and we don't see those on the Outer Cape. So even just that little bit of distance, that little bit of geography, temperature difference, you get, you're likely to get earlier woodcocks. I am looking on a map, and I'm seeing that people have been reporting them this month to Thompson's Field in Harwich and one up in Peatown. So people are starting to get woodcocks. So, East Ham, it is time to listen for that. You know, like around dusk, just when it's kind of starting to get dark. If it's a, especially if it's a calm night and you live near where field meets woods, especially.
Exactly.
You hear that meh. They're a lot of fun. Woodcocks are great.
I've been lucky enough this year actually to see them on the ground a couple of times.
Nice.
Standing on the ground, and I have a dog that fortunately doesn't care about birds, even though she's a bird dog. So we walked on by.
Harry, thanks for letting us know. Right. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News This Morning with Mark Faraday. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Richard writes, I believe I saw a juvenile bald eagle around Little Neck Bars Road in West Falmouth at the south end of West Falmouth Harbor. The neighborhood birds were not happy about it. We're hearing about more and more eagle sightings.
Yes, overall, year-round, immature, mature, just a big increase in the potential to see eagles. I see them all the time. I was just driving, you know, across Wellfleet yesterday, and there was one in kind of a wooded neighborhood, random place, not near a pond. You know, they're just around, and the population is a little bigger in the winter when there might be some ones from further north that end up here. And the young ones just kind of accumulate as the nesting has been increasing in Massachusetts. And these young ones are in that brown plumage without the white head for 4 to 5 years. Mm. And so, those young ones are more and more common because they just kind of wander around and they don't nest until their fifth year. And even then, they're probably not successful. So they take a while to mature.
Yeah.
I remember 20 something years ago, bald eagles were just really hard to find on the Cape. And maybe you'd see one in June was a classic time to see one. And it would be one like a young one that wandered up from Florida. You know, they would nest and then really early in Florida and fledge and then disperse north and just go kind of wandering. And that's probably where the ones we would see back then came from. But now we produce our own, and
now
the population
in
the Northeast is getting bigger and bigger. And
Marianne has a question about an osprey platform. She says the telephone pole appears to be poking through the center of the osprey platform on Gifford Street in Falmouth. Is there a way to get that checked out before the birds return?
Well, there's the Falmouth Osprey Project. They've got a Facebook page. Kevin Friel and Barbara Schneider, they might be on, they do a pretty good job of keeping track of all the different poles. I don't know that particular one. Mm-hmm. One thing I've been trying to do, but contact the Falmouth Osprey Project. And again, they have a Facebook page. And they might already be on to that one. Yeah. But one thing I've been doing lately is there's a group of people who track osprey populations here in Massachusetts. And we had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and we're trying to figure out, this guy Dave Rimmer up at the Essex County Greenbelt has sort of taken the lead, talking to all the different people who track different populations. You know, Rob Beauregard does the Vineyard, and then, Mass Audubon, Allen's Pond, that does that Westport River along with Allen Pool. And, how many ospreys are there now in Massachusetts? And nobody really knows. I don't even know how many there are on the Cape. And I had a project that was specifically trying to figure out, A, how many nests are there on the Cape, and then track them over time to get a sense of how many chicks they're producing. And the answer is there are a lot, and they're producing a lot of chicks, and they still are producing a lot of chicks. Mm. I mean, it is crazy how many ospreys are on the Cape now. And over 500 pairs, I'm very sure of that. Yeah. I don't know how much north of 500 it is, but it used to be, one pair back in the 70s. And so kind of during my lifetime, it's gone from one pair to 500 plus pairs and growing, right? It's not plateaued, it's growing. And we have a good index of that because Kevin tracks the Falmouth population so closely. He does basically a complete census of the nests in Falmouth. And it's gone from, like 130 something a few years ago, and now it's more like 168, Right. So that's a huge percentage growth in just a few years for a population that had already had exponential growth, right? So it's not even slowing down. And so more and more, our work with ospreys is trying to figure out how to mitigate their conflicts with human structures to protect the ospreys and the infrastructure itself. And so, boy, it's they have recovered, especially, Falmouth, Bourne, Mashpee, that area, the Upper Cape into the Mid Cape. It's very different on the Outer Cape. I'm not aware of Provincetown having a nest yet.
But it
It's been
probably
they've
will, yeah.
well, yeah, I mean, there aren't poles or anything, and it's not as much shoreline, not as much marsh, but it's not like the rest of the Cape. But Truro, less than 10, the Outer Cape is still very different, but the mid and upper Cape is just absolutely loaded
Booming,
to
yeah.
the gills with ospreys.
Heather, who's a volunteer at Audubon in Wellfleet, says, I've heard some woodcocks down in Brewster in the parking lot of Brickwater Beach. And she sent us a little video with some sound. But so seeing the woodcocks.
All right, Breakwater Beach. Right. And once I looked into eBird. Oh, and as I'm clicking around in eBird right here, trying to see who's had woodcocks, I came across someone. Does anyone know Janet Woodcock? I'm clicking around and who has reported woodcocks at eBird at Aquinnah. Here's a record from March 1st from Janet Woodcock. Come on. That
Very
can't be
good.
the real name.
I don't know, maybe it
Call in, Janet. Call in if you're
is.
listening.
All right, so now we're seeing we mentioned the some of the early migrants. Piping plovers will be arriving soon, right?
Yes. I think a couple of oyster catchers, usually a couple of oyster catchers turn up a few days before the piping plovers. And I think some oyster catchers have turned up somewhere, Falmouth? I'm trying to remember where. But yes, it's that time of year. And so, again, mid-March, ospreys, piping plovers, the very first ones. They're not flooding back yet, but those first scouts can always be expected by mid-March, and what, today's the 11th. And so, yeah, we're coming right up on that. And by, the first piping, and then the nesting is in April, right? The very first piping plover nests will be towards the end of April, mid-April, the very earliest ones. And then, the ospreys will be getting down to nesting by April, but they start coming back now. So it's time. The signs of spring are just rolling along. And did we just hope the weather comes along with them?
Yeah, no kidding. If you have a bird comment, question, story, give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Also, bluebirds now are what scouting out the their boxes where they might decide to set up shop. You've had some, but did you tell me you have them scouting and then they decide not to nest in your boxes? What's going on?
Yeah, this time of year, they're just sort of checking out the real estate, and the males are ahead of the females in terms of wanting to settle down right now. But there's been a very abrupt change in how I see bluebirds in my neighborhood. And if I walk around my neighborhood all winter long, I'll drop off Beckett at the bus, and it's like, a little before 7 o'clock, I might walk around the neighborhood a little bit. I always hear bluebirds, see a flock of bluebirds. There was a flock of like nine bluebirds that I would see every day. And so they're in flocks when they're in winter mode. They're looking for fruit like multiflora rose and things like that and whatever else they can find. But very abruptly in the last week and a half, they're singing, 2 weeks, I'd say. They're singing, they are displaying, they're territorial, and they're in pairs. And that happened very quickly. And I've seen them checking out nest boxes. I saw them checking out a nest box in my neighbor's yard last week, I think it was. So yeah, it's time. And if you maintain boxes, there's always a question, when do I clean out my boxes? Some people do it in, right after nesting season, but it's always worth a check again leading up to nesting season. And so they may not be super serious. They're not going to be dropping eggs in early March. But you want to have it presentable if you're looking to get some of those early prospectors to settle down in your box, and owl boxes too. So if you maintain those, you might want to check it out. I don't get up into mine very often. sometimes you have to go in and see what the squirrels have been up to make sure it's still habitable to owls. But anyway, I'm curious if anybody else has screech owls going into bigger nest box occupiers. Because the last few Marches, I've gotten a screech owl that shows up in my box. It's been there for years. I've never had any nesting, though. I'd be like, yay, the owl's in the box. You get the kids, and we go look. It's peeking out, towards dusk. It's getting ready to go out and kill stuff. But then it's there for a while. Maybe it's a male, or maybe they're just using it as a roosting box. But they could have been using it as a roosting box all winter. I feel like my guess is it's a male, and he's hoping to attract a female to that box, but it never seems to work out. And by after a few weeks, they're gone, and I don't get any nesting, which
Do
is
they
disappointing. But
do you hear them like calling out, like looking for that female screech owl going, "Hey, I'm over here. Come check it out."
yeah, the one time I saw that definitely happening, heard that and saw it, it was early January. Yeah, it was like New Year's Eve. That's
Oh,
right. It was
wow.
the night. It was the night I got back from the Truro Christmas bird count, and two different screech owls were calling back and forth to each other, like one in the front of the house and one in the back of one in the neighbor's yard and one in our yard. And then eventually one of them went into the box, and it was calling, 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 and it started doing a call that I've never heard a screech owl do. That is a nest box call. And again, this was early January. But then that was it. They were gone. They never came back. I was so excited, like, oh, they're clearly mating behavior. They're setting up shop. And then they disappeared. One was red, one was gray. But it was this funny bouncing ball call that I've never heard screech owls do. But yeah, since then, nothing. And then we're back to they turn up in March. So I'm just curious if anybody else has suddenly seen activity at their screech owl box that has not been occupied all winter, or if it's just me.
All right. Hillary writes, "My husband got some pictures of the lower Cape eagles mating on Valentine's Day shortly before their nesting pole blew over. Thank you for everything you did to help get their love nest back up. My question is, what's the situation with backyard birds and bird flu? Should we continue to fill feeders and baths?"
It's a good question, and it keeps coming up. And nobody has said, other than the only thing I've seen is the different towns on the Vineyard Boards of Health sent out a letter recommending people take down bird feeders. But no, nothing bigger than that. I haven't seen anything from Mass Wildlife, and Mass Wildlife doesn't want anybody feeding birds ever.
At
So I'm
all.
surprised they have a baseline opinion of being against bird feeding because they get all the reports of bears getting into bird feeders and getting onto people's property and rats, so they see from the perspective of the wildlife, Mass Wildlife, it's like an attractive nuisance, right? But nothing, Cornell, National Audubon, Mass, nobody's saying take down your feeders. It's still a pretty weak signal for bird flu in songbirds. It's still really waterfowl. I'm worried about raptors. Raptors definitely get it. Bald eagles get bird flu and die. I think there have been some local cases. And then I'm worried about the colonial water birds. I'm worried about the tern colony on Monomoy. They've been
Oh,
dodging that
boy.
bullet for two years now. This is going into the third year that the highly pathogenic avian influenza has been here on the Cape, and you're talking about what 20,000 pairs of common terns shoulder to shoulder, the biggest colony in the East Coast, maybe in North America. And so, yeah, I'm worried about that. It has gotten into colonies elsewhere in the world, tern colonies in the upper Midwest, gannet colonies in Europe. And so, yeah, it's worth watching. But really, all of the vigilance has been around waterfowl and make sure it doesn't get into people. And it would be difficult if it gets into people. From what I read, it typically would go through a pig intermediary. Like it would get into pigs, and that is where the mutation that makes it transmissible from birds to people would happen in past outbreaks of different bird flus. And so Let's keep the pigs healthy. Let's
Yeah.
keep the birds away from your pigs. But you know, I have a neighbor. I keep saying, well, if you got backyard chickens, you probably shouldn't be feeding wild birds. But my neighbors, the poor neighbors are down to one chicken. They've had a lot of predators,
Oh.
and they have that last chicken, and it's, you know,
Right.
technically they're doing everything wrong. The chicken is under the trees where all the local birds hang out, and they have bird feeders three different places in their
Oh,
yard.
wow.
But
Yeah.
so far that chicken's doing okay. Yeah, I mean, one chicken, you know, if one chicken dies of bird flu, it's sort of who cares. But it's big flocks where it's a problem, and
Yeah.
certainly the commercial flocks where it's a huge
See the.
problem, and it's gotten into milk in the dairy
Yep.
at dairy farms on the West Coast. And I haven't heard much on
Yeah,
that
it's kind of
recently, but.
scary. Going back to the not feeding birds at all, you know, when I gave up my bird feeders, which was because of rats, I was bummed because, you know, you like to see all the birds right outside your window. But I have found that all those same birds are still in my yard. And if you create the habitat for them, you can still have the birds without putting up the feeders. And Mark, I know you're big on this, on some of the flora and fauna that will attract birds. We can still attract them to our yard and not put up the feeders.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right. The birds don't go extinct if you take your feeders down, and they'll still be in the neighborhood. And it's amazing if you actually watch the birds other than when they're at your feeders, if you just walk around your neighborhood and watch them, they spend very little time at feeders. They're finding insects, the chickadees, the titmice, the nuthatches, some things that don't ever visit feeders for the most part, like kinglets. You know, they're finding insects, because that's what they do. It's what they've always done. They certainly didn't evolve with, you know, piles of sunflower seeds. It's not natural at all for a chickadee in the North Woods. And so that, you know, they're doing their thing, and we feed the birds for us, as I always say, that's for us, not for them. It's so we can appreciate them more and see them and interact with them in that way. But yeah, they'll still be around. And if you're maintaining your yard in a bird-friendly way, which means leaving the native vegetation in the first place, like step one, if you're developing a new lot, don't just turn it to dirt like they so often do. Just everything must go, and then, you know, cut down all the native stuff and then plant things from Asia. That's been the classic way of landscaping suburbia for generations, is to cut down all the native stuff, put in a lawn of grasses from Europe, put in shrubs from Korea, right? This is how we land. We've devastated the native plants in our yards. But in a lot of places they have. In my neighborhood, they left the trees, or at least the trees have grown back in. So we have a nice forested matrix in my neighborhood with some of the understory plants, the blueberry, the huckleberry, the viburnums. And so if you're starting there, leave that stuff as much as you can. Don't cut it down and put in a what most people do, put in a thirsty lawn, and then you hire a service to come and put toxic chemicals on it 5 times a year or whatever. I just see too much of that. It's silly. It's not necessary, and it's not good for our water. It's not good for our wildlife. And so have a chemical-free yard as much as you can. Plant native plants. Start with trees and shrubs. You know, berry-producing plants like hollies, chokeberries, things like that, crab apples. That'll get you some winter frugivores, you know, bluebirds and waxwings and things. And then just a diversity of native plants that what you're doing is you're supporting the native insects, because that's what birds eat. Even birds you don't think of as eating insects, you know, you see cardinals at your feeder with that big seed cracking bill, but they're feeding their chicks insects. The only things that don't feed their chicks insects are goldfinches, maybe some of the other finches, but particularly goldfinches and maybe mourning doves and pigeons. But really, everything is feeding their chicks little caterpillars, and those little caterpillars need native plants. And so that's just the best way to support birds is to use this kind of wildlife-friendly, bird-friendly landscaping technique. Putting up bird feeders over your, you know, chartreuse chemically maintained lawn is not really helping the birds that much.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Songbirds building nests right now. I mean, pretty soon we're going to see babies in like a month or so, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if a mourning dove had a nest somewhere. They'll often nest pretty early. House finches sometimes start really early. Sometimes Carolina wrens. I'd be surprised if they had nests right now. But soon enough,
they'll start.
You know, I mean, yeah. These resident birds that don't migrate south, they can take advantage of a warm, you know, warm late winter or whatever, and get an early nesting attempt in.
It's kind of fun to watch them, like when you see them taking the little nesting material and going into the different bushes or trees. It kind of gives you an idea of, okay, well, there's something going on, because it's hard to see. I mean, last year I had a catbird nest in an azalea bush, and I didn't even know it was there until I started weeding back there, and then I went whoop, and I just backed away and left it alone until the birds left. But yeah, sometimes you know if you can see them kind of in and out of some of these bushes, you know, you'll know what's going on in there and avoid it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of catbirds will come back in early May, and they love, catbirds and cardinals love foundation plants. Mm-hmm. They'll very happy to nest in something shrub that's right up against your house. You know, robins like nesting around house, certainly house finches. And house finches will nest early, and they'll nest on a backlight or a hanging plant or something like that. Get a lot of questions about, what is this bird that's brown? And there's another one that's got red on it. So yeah, house finches are very friendly, and they're pretty early nesters. So keep an eye out for what they're doing if they're hanging around your hanging plants or whatever.
Yeah. So, Jenny says the grackles are nesting in the bamboo next to her house right now.
No, they're roosting there.
Roosting there, not, Jenny.
She's saying no. There, yeah. What, you mean they're like building a nest?
Are they building a nest? She's saying yes. She's giving thumbs up. Building a nest in the bamboo.
In a million years, I wouldn't have guessed that grackles nest in early March.
Every year, she says.
Wow.
You're going to have to come and check it out. Yeah.
I caught flat-footed.
Let's talk to Jane, calling from Wellfleet. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. Just wondering about owls. We heard great horned owls every year, especially during the late winter, hooting back and forth, and we haven't heard any this year or last year much. We did hear, I think, a barred owl this winter, maybe in December, and just your thoughts on that. And also, within a few miles of us, a person put up a screech owl box and immediately got a screech owl sitting in it. And so her neighbor went and got one, put up an owl box, and immediately got a screech owl. This is in the Lieutenant Island area, down Lieutenant Island roadway.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I don't know that they're still there or that they nested, but they were there for days and days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's not a lot of woods on Lieutenant Island. Their woods are all gone, and it's all houses. But there really aren't natural places for screech owls to nest, but it must be good hunting. So there's high demand in that housing market there for screech owls. Interesting.
Must be.
But wait, you're on Lieutenant Island in Wellfleet. You heard a barred owl?
No, we're on Old County Road down towards the campground.
Oh. Yeah,
the screech owls are on Lieutenant Island Road.
Right. Screech owls are sort of everywhere, but barred owls are a recent colonizer of the Cape, and they have, you know, they've been saturating, say, Sandwich, Mashpee, Falmouth, that area, and they like bigger woods, but they've been slow to get out to the Cape. There have been people reporting them in the Cape Cod National Seashore, Old County Road, that area up in Truro and Wellfleet.
Yeah, that's where we are.
That's where you're saying. Yeah. And so that was this year?
December, maybe.
That was December. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean they seem to be trying to colonize that area, and so yeah, keep an ear out.
Yeah.
that's great.
But
But
the
that's
great
a
horn, what
barred owl
where
is
are the
still a
great horn?
novelty
I
on the
was
Outer
hearing
Cape.
great horned owls in my neighborhood in Falmouth, but that's a bit of a ways from wealthy. But I mean, I hear them every year, and mostly in January, and I did hear them in my yard.
Yeah, I mean they're very common and you can hear them from great distances. So, but we seem to have lost one of our nesting pairs at Wellfleet Sanctuary, and that might have been what allowed our ospreys to nest on the platform for the first time in like 43 years. First time ever. This osprey pole has been up 43 years, and we always said, "Well, it's too close to the woods where the great horned owls are." And then someone found one of the great horned owls dead, and then all of a sudden the next year we finally get an osprey nest. But with great horned owls, with all of these predatory birds, I worry about rodenticides. You know, this is a big campaign for Mass Audubon and other organizations getting people off of the anticoagulant rodenticides. You have those black boxes, and some guy comes and puts bait in it, and the bait, the rats and mice eat it, and then they stagger off, and then the owls and the eagles get them, and if they eat too many of them, they die because it's a blood thinner. And there have been some well-publicized cases of eagles, great horned owls, red-tailed hawks, dying because of these rodenticides that are still widely used by, exterminators and pest control people. And so, yeah,
So
stay away
you're
from
saying at
those. We don't.
Wellfleet Bay, you don't have the great horned owls either. You haven't been
We
having
haven't been
those
hearing them as
yet.
much. We've been doing owl prowls that have been pretty quiet. And I have, yeah, I have not been hearing the great horned owls at Wellfleet Bay so much this year. And so I don't know if.
Well, we ran into our neighbor here on Old County Road, and she also said, "Have you heard any owls?" This was, about a month ago. I said, "No, we haven't heard them, and we used to hear them all the time. They'd be right, outside our window, I guess, during the night."
And the one interesting thing you have in that area is saw-whet owls should breed there. They certainly winter there. Some years, and in the winter you find them in the kind of shrub swamps adjacent to the woods, and they're like, you might hear them tooting like that closer to April and May. Do you hear them? Do you remember hearing the saw-whet owls? Because they
No.
do nest in that area.
I wouldn't have known, but I'll look it up.
Okay. Yeah, they might. You might think it was a peeper, because they're just like,
Yes,
"Oh,
very soon.
okay. We have a lot of peepers."
Yeah. Jane,
Yeah.
thank you for the
If
call.
it sounds like a peeper, I don't know. It'll
Yeah,
be
we'll
lost.
look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jane, thanks for
Yeah,
the
look it
call.
up.
Marilyn says, "We've had a screech owl box up for at least 6 years, and a screech owl has been using the box since the beginning. Of course, maybe not the same owl over all those years, but to respond to Mark's question, we have never seen any nesting activity." So there's another one who's,
Yeah.
said the same kind of thing. One of the things that now too is we're seeing, the increasing songbird, which I guess kind of peaks in June as these birds are coming in and having their territory. Now we also might see some of those woodpeckers banging on our house. I had one the other day. I was like, "What the heck?" Because now they're like, what, saying, "This is my territory." Is that what they're doing when they're banging on whatever they're banging on?
Yeah, the drumming is territorial. That's not about finding food. That's about, here I am, this is my territory. And yeah, flickers are famous for finding something loud like a chimney cap and driving people insane, first thing in the morning, just like a little jackhammer up on your roof,
And I guess the other thing
not
we
in,
can do is
not
just
ingratiating themselves.
no, and I guess it'll go away in a little while, right? So we just kind of have to deal with it for
It
a
is
little while.
temporary, yeah. Isn't everything?
And what about the bird song? I mean, what are we starting to hear more of?
Well, I mean, it ramped up a long time ago, and it's continuing to ramp up a lot. Song sparrows are just full on singing, and the titmice and the chickadees and house finches are singing quite a bit. Carolina wrens sing all winter. It's hard to notice a difference with them. They're just loudmouths. But yeah, you just notice there's more and more intense singing by all of these local resident birds that it's nice.
Yeah.
You know, it
no,
just,
I love it. Yeah.
It really improves the atmosphere as we look forward to spring.
Although if you're on the islands, you don't get to hear the titmice. They don't like to fly over water, right?
That's right. I always forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like to fly. And people have seen them kind of like trying to get up their nerve to cross the canal. You know, it's not exactly the Pacific Ocean, right? You know, they're just some birds are flying across the Pacific Ocean and the titmice is like, I don't know. It's, you know, you can see the other side right over there. Like, yeah. No, you go first.
That's funny. So we won't see hummingbirds for a while.
Right. More than a month, I'd say 6 weeks, five, mm-hmm. 6 weeks until the very first. And there's usually only a couple of mid-April reports. People always ask us, yeah, mid-April, you know, why not? Mm-hmm. Why not buy a lottery ticket? You probably won't be the person that gets their first hummingbird in mid-April. You'll probably have to wait till early May, like most of us. But some people
you never
do get
know.
Hummingbirds. And yeah, the first scouts do show up in mid-April. So why not be ready? It's cold. You don't have to change the water a ton because it's not like it's not summer where it gets mm-hmm. all moldy real quick.
Yeah.
So,
I do put up a hummingbird feeder. I don't do the other feeders, but I do the hummingbird because it's not impacting anything really. Right. And you never know. I have to say, I don't often see hummingbirds at my feeder. I see them more once the flowers start blooming. They're in my yard every day, but I don't always see them on the feeder early.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And that's a fun thing to plant for, too, is it's way more satisfying to see hummingbirds on your landscape plants than it is on a feeder.
Yeah.
Anybody can hang a feeder and put some sugar water out, right? But when my coral honeysuckle, this native honeysuckle vine from a little further south, you know, when that's in full bloom and the hummingbirds are hitting it, it just, that's much more satisfying to me than mm-hmm. than having them come to a plastic feeder.
Yeah. Sarah writes, I've been using peanut butter mixed with baking soda for rats. Does that hurt owls? I've never heard of that. Have you?
No, it wouldn't. I can't imagine that would hurt owls. Yeah, there
does
are these
it kill
different
the
kind
rats?
Of
I mean, would
well,
be
I think
the...
that's the I think that's the idea. I remember looking into that. It was just one of these folk remedies, and I have to look into that again. It's not like really widespread,
mm-hmm.
but I've heard of people saying that it works. But yeah, it shouldn't have secondary toxicity to anything.
Yeah, boy, that would be great if that really works. It'd be great to. To know that you could use that, right? I mean, that's the tough thing. It's because the rats are just, they're everywhere. They're so prevalent. I mean, I have no foods. In my yard now, I see the, you know, little holes where the rats come in at night. I must just be on a path or something because there's no food out there for them. I don't know why they come to my yard.
Yeah, it's the neighborhood and trash. And there's just enough in the larger area that I haven't been seeing them so much in my yard. They're probably around, but like I always say, whenever this comes up, once I secured my compost, I zip tied it back together and got rid of all the places they could get into my closed compost container. I just stopped seeing them all together. And I have not stopped feeding the birds. I feed the birds all winter long and I don't see any rats once I secured my compost.
Less than a minute. Chris says, we have tufted titmice in Vineyard Haven. Are they the same species that you referred to as afraid to fly over water?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
How'd they get there?
Yeah, it took the ferry. Well, no, I mean, they're not like completely opposed. They will eventually cross the canal, but they don't like it. I mean, they are very... reticent.
So a couple of them said, let's do it. Let's get to the vineyard. All right.
Right. And there were so few. There was the famous chick mouse.
Oh, right. The different
it was
call.
Half chickadee, half titmouse, right? They just weren't enough of mates to go around. And so they hybridized.
There you go. All right.
Yeah.
Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary, joins us the second Tuesday of every month. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Catch you next time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistants from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.